Welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, your conference co-host. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Reid Wilson, a clinical psychologist who has spent 40 years in the field of self-help for anxiety disorders and OCD. His latest book is called Stopping the Noise in Your Head, and his current online self-help course is called OCD and the Six-Moment Game, Strategies and Tactics. Dr. Reid Wilson, thank you so much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
So I want to start right out of the gate, because people often mischaracterize OCD in their own or someone else's behaviors. So I would love it if you could start by helping us understand what OCD is and isn't.
Sure. Well, this is 2 to 3 million people in the United States that would be diagnosed with OCD. So obsessions, really anything that you are going to start worrying about, and compulsions, the only thing you know to stop the worry. So, and then we know the categories generally: washing and cleaning and checking and ordering, and you know, the list goes on in that way. What did I forget? What did I say? All of those things are the worries. And that, and one of the things that we notice about, or at least I notice when I'm working with people, is it's not just the topic of what they worry about, but it's how it happens. So they don't go, huh, I wonder what I said. It's like, oh my God, what did I say? Right. So there's a kind of urgency that is another, because people go like, how do I know if this is an obsession or not? One of the ways to look at it outside of the topic is, am I perceiving it as urgent to solve the problem? I have to do it right now. So part of the trouble with the disorder, just like all the anxiety disorders that people are going to learn about in this conference, is that it picks when it wants to intrude in your mind. You don't get to control that when they show up. And so that, of course, begins to lead us into the treatment in terms of, these disorders are not allowed to do that. And so we have to learn, have to help empower people to learn how to, you know, if I have to pay attention to this topic, if it's important, I'll choose when I pay attention to it instead of this disorder.
I love the power and agency and control that it gives people back. And so much of what we talk about in the anxiety conference is energy, because I don't think most people understand, before they kind of start their healing journey or curiosity about their anxiety, how much energy it requires just to have it, or to deal with it, or cope with it, or avoid it. Yeah. Or like, absolutely. Just tremendous.
Well, you know, and I would also say, unlike so many disorders, these anxiety disorders are built on self-help, because we're trying to start with a self-help model, with these kind of workshops and conferences and books and videos and so forth. But even when you get into treatment with a specialist, when you're done, what you're left with is self-help. You can't just, you know, do the treatment and then let go. You have to incorporate, assimilate, metabolize the principles of the treatment, because anxiety disorders and OCD tend to run the life cycle. So we, you know, if you just, you know, do this and then leave, well, 2 years from now, something else may crop up, and we want you to be able to brush your skills off and get back to work again, instead of continually depending on us, unless you need to. We're here if you need it. But so let's see, you talk about the energy, and that is part of the energy. I have to step up. I have to take ownership of my own treatment. You, as the specialist working with me, are a consultant for me. I hire you. You're here to help me. That's really the attitude I want clients to have.
Absolutely. I was talking with somebody just the other day about trying to make sense of this phenomenon that you're talking about. And I compared it to when you've had the privilege of going to a destination a bunch of times, but somebody else drove. And then you go to drive and you're like, it feels like I've never been here before. You've got to figure it out on your own, even though
Yeah, it's
you've been there several
intimidating.
times.
It's
Yeah.
intimidating,
And
right?
that's
And so
like
you
what
have to
it's
also
right.
expect that, right?
Yeah. And that's, you're like, wait a minute. And it's confusing and disorienting. And you're like, I've been here a lot of times. But once you finally get in the driver's seat and you take control and you learn it your own way and navigate and get yourself from point A to B, you're like, oh, wait, I'm completely capable of getting there now. It feels easy.
Yeah, I saw a video this morning of these a pair of rowers from Ireland who won silver medal in Rio. But they train, they train, they train, they train. They said in the race, that first three or four strokes, we were terrible, right? And that's what we're talking about. In the beginning, it's just awkward and uncomfortable, but you have to know that there is a learning curve, and you can do it.
Absolutely. So I want to get into the weeds a little bit and help people understand what the strategies are that you've developed that help people cope. And I was writing this question and I was like, is cope the right word? Is heal the right word? Is overcome the right word? Like, how do you even characterize how people apply these techniques and strategies?
Well, cope. My son has type 1 diabetes. He has to cope with that all his life. If he doesn't take, insulin, he dies. So coping sometimes is, how do I do my breathing? How do I avoid situations that might get me upset and so forth? And so we're more, at least how I work, is more aggressive than coping. I want to take on the disorder and take down the disorder. And so that's my intention. It's very difficult to talk about cure because people will really argue about that. And that's fine. But we don't want to think about it like type 1 diabetes, where I just have to, it'll always be with me and I have to manage it. Let's take it down. Maybe it will be with you all your life. Maybe it won't, but let's peel away the layers of the onion, get down to the raw work that you have to do, learn that, and, moment by moment, control your mind again.
Absolutely. Thank you for that context. I'm glad I asked because I think it's a good
Don't get
one.
me excited, Megan, because I'm just gonna.
I'm definitely going to get you excited because I think there's a power in the excitement, and you've been doing this for a long time. You've helped a lot of people. I mean, 40 years. I think we can trust what you've seen and what you have to say. So,
Now
your
I'm gonna make a point about that,
yeah.
about trust. And trust is, for therapists and specialists like us, trust is critical because we are taking down a fortress. It is in your mind, solidly controlled by a belief system that you have adopted. We have to break through that fortress to get your mind back. And so the idea of trust and faith is helpful because, as we were just talking about, you're going to do some things where you are not sure how it's going to go. You cannot be certain about it. And that's the core of the disorder. It has inside you now a drive to be sure everything is okay, and it controls you that way. So we're not only working on these topics, we're working on this idea of, I need to step forward without being sure.
And this brings up another fascinating question, which is, you talked about it as this fortress belief system, right? And fortresses exist to keep out danger. And so, as we're breaking down this fortress that was built in order to give us a feeling of safety, not, the perception of safety and control, how do we discern between discomfort, which is completely acceptable and necessary for growth and dismantling that fortress, and danger, because our perception between what we're actually our safety and our danger is going to be misconstrued at times, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, particularly when you're facing the circumstance. So where I want to start is, let's look at signals versus noise. Every worry that you and I and everybody else in the universe has shows up as a signal. This is important. You need to handle this. And for a lot of those worries, they come in. We go, okay, well, that's nothing. I did, yes, I mailed the check to the bank or whatever. But what happens with OCD is you are kind of worshiping this false god, which is saying, this is serious and dangerous, and you have to handle it. So, outside of the moment where you're in the midst of your OCD, your obsession, we have to work through to what degree do you really believe this topic is a danger, and to what degree is it noise? So, if you feel like this is how I need to clean my counters, I have to use this product and then do it three times, and that's fine. I have no problem with you telling me what rules you need to follow in order to be safe enough. And then we have to discern where are you stepping outside the bounds. Then, I'm big on rules. Let's set up when we're not in the middle of the problem, what you believe to be the proper response here. And then, as I would say, lock it down. Because when you step into the scene that's provocative, the part of you that is victim to the disorder is who shows up first. Anxious, scared, frightened. What am I doing? This is going to be terrible. And we have to have a, we have to split you a little bit, not in like psychotic splitting, but like have a therapeutic voice that shows up at that same time. And here's the other problem. You can't have both of these voices parallel. You can't have your fearful victim of the disorder and your therapeutic voice talking back and forth, because that you'll just argue and stay in the middle and the disorder wins then. So we have to elevate that therapeutic voice so that it can go, wait a minute, I got a part of me that I need to take care of. This part of me is younger, so to speak, less resourceful, frightened. I know what needs to happen here. And so we got to take control in that way. And that is really hard to accomplish, but it's what has to happen.
And I
You,
love.
I would, the last thing I would say around that particular piece, I tell you, you wind me up, Megan. This is your fault. It's like you, I now I no longer know what that was, because I made that comment. So I'll remember it as we talk.
I'll start talking and you'll remember what you were going to say. It was my fault for accidentally interrupting you. Zoom is hard.
Remember it now.
Go ahead.
This is not about my topic. This is a mental health disorder. And I really, I'm not trying to shame people when I say it like that, but it's not about contamination. It's not about being a pedophile. It's not about having just run somebody over and they'll be dead by morning because no one sees them in the ditch in the high grass, and it'll be your fault. It's not about any of those things. Those topics are chosen by the disorder to control you. If you stay at the level of these, what I would call themes, topics, you never win. You have to elevate to win. You have to elevate to dominate. You have to go, it's not about this, it's about this. And what is this up here? This is the disorder. And what I have to face is distressing uncertainty in a generic sense. So it's not like I'm walking to down the sidewalk, leaving the front door to go to work, and I'm thinking, man, I'm not sure if the door's locked, but I'm going to go ahead and go to work anyway. It's not about the door. And this is one of the things that I'm trying to convey to the field that's different in the field, because when you do exposure and response prevention, which is the traditional and gold standard of treatment, you focus so much on the topic. So people go, oh, what my therapist said was, maybe I locked the door, maybe I didn't, I can handle uncertainty. No. Let's go to the next level. Oh, maybe I'm a pedophile. Maybe I'm not. I can handle uncertainty. Maybe I hit somebody. They're in the ditch. They'll be dead by morning. It'll be my fault. Maybe I didn't. I can handle uncertainty. To me, that's nuts. So that's what I was going to say earlier. It dropped out, which is we start with going, it's not about that topic. If we don't accomplish that, nothing else works because clients obey the instruction of a therapist and do an exercise simultaneously going, this just feels wrong. I gotta be careful. When that side of you shows up that's victim to the disorder, I want to say to it, I need to be careless. Not as you and I would think is careless, but what that side of me says is careless. No, I'm not going to wipe it down one more time, even though I have the urge to, because that's too much. I'm going to be careless in order to get my mind back.
You said something
Rough.
earlier about kind of, and I'm paraphrasing, so correct me if I get any part of this wrong, but about kind of making an agreement before you're in those stressful situations. And you talked in terms of like parts and caretaking for this part of you that has a need, right? And I've heard the phrase like, we don't practice a fire drill in a fire. And so I think that's what I hear you saying, which is like, we need to establish those rules, which you said are okay, but we need to do that before. And then all we're doing is
Absolutely.
adhering to like who's in charge, the adult, fully developed person who doesn't have these kind of like childlike injuries. This is the person in charge. And we've made an agreement with that person that this is how we're going to handle the situation. And we're not going to let ourselves go off the rail with the cleaning or the checking or the whatever, because we've decided that this was the rule and we can follow a rule. Do I have that kind of right?
Yeah, and what I say is this is a simple model. And it's difficult. But it's not complex. So this whole thing of getting it, like you just talked about, exactly right. And then, if possible, if it's not spontaneous, just before I enter a circumstance where I tend to get provoked, I say that to myself, hey, I'm about to walk in there and change my clothes. And when I open that closet, I'm going to start having these thoughts. And then I'm going to want to do this. And here's my intention instead. So we can get like, 3 minutes before I do an exposure as well. Then, it kind of cues us in because all the other reactions that we have are automatic. They just show up. And there's no, to me, there's no problem with that obsession popping up. It's that just is going to happen. So I'm not trying to stop it from popping up. I'm going to do something different in response to it showing up. I'm going to have that urge to do my, get rid of this fear immediately. It's going to pop up and I'm fine with that. That's unconsciously mediated. So we can't come in and consciously shut down something that we don't have control over. Our control starts with, the phrase I would use is bringing mindfulness into the fire. So, the very first thing we do is to be able to say, therapeutic at least in the moment is, oh, I'm doing it. Oh, there's my obsession, or oh, there's my urge. Now, sometimes it takes 15 minutes for you to even notice that you're obsessing. It's like daydreaming and missing your turn, and when you're driving, where was my mind? Oh, it was over here. Well, sometimes you're just in it, but it's whenever you can step back and go, oh, I'm doing it. And if I can do that again in the moment, that has to be mastered first to be able to step back. Because if you can step back and identify, you've just put a little wedge of time, space between you and the obsession. What I want people to do next is turn away from the theme, just turn their back on the theme. I am not addressing this anymore. And then the next thing is I'm going to go get engaged in something else. And other specialists will say, well, That's just distraction. You're not treating the disorder. You're distracting people. That's not true. Because if I've got this, as we've been talking, right, this urgent, fearful, expectation of something going wrong, and I choose not to handle it, not to answer it, when I turn away and engage in something else, I'm now doing pure exposure. I am turning away. This is, exposure and then response prevention. I'm turning over here, engaging over here with this obsession still on the back burner here, still messing with me. I've only got like, a third of my ability to get back to work because, two-thirds of me is back here, but I'm doing this, and you do that over and over again, and that's how you get stronger, because this is 100% a neurological treatment. We are trying to get the amygdala, our panic button and everything in there in the limbic system to hear us say, "Hey, just kidding, this is okay for me." Right? And if I don't get to the place of I this is what I want right now. I want this is all right. I got this. Then we're not going to do the neurological work. So I'm firm. I push because they need to push. This isn't mindfulness. This is mindfulness to get started. It's a platform on which we step. And then we aggress and push into this territory. And, I want my life back. I got people who are caught up in the spirituality regarding OCD. And it tells you, you have to do this, or you have to think that, or you're not allowed to be anxious when you're reading the Bible. And so now we've got people whose entire spiritual life has been taken over by the disorder. We have to kick it out of my spiritual life so I can have it back. And people will get motivated around that if, so they have to have an outcome picture. I don't, I want this back in my life. And then they have to be able to perceive a path that makes sense to them, that gives them a chance to win. If they don't, they need to have both those things because that gives them some drive. And then, I'm a cognitive therapist, so we're not doing exposure in the typical sense. We're doing behavioral experiments. So we'll, I'll talk their ear off. I know that surprises you, but I will talk their ear off to get them to kind of have a sense. Does that make sense? And then we'll just design, how about for the next 5 days, you try this. And just see what it gets, because experience is the greatest teacher. That's I can talk until I'm blue in the face. If they don't go out and try it on, we don't win.
Absolutely. And as you're speaking, I'm thinking about again this like family system and these internal parts of ourselves that we're dealing with. And
Absolutely.
just
Perfect.
like you wouldn't be having an argument or a confrontation with a family member and then say like you need to calm down. Like if they're feeling really urgent and overloaded and disproportionately reactive to the situation, what you do is you turn you're like, I'm going to give you a bit to settle down and we'll continue this conversation later. And
Absolutely.
it sounds very much the same. It's like, I see you,
Internal
I
family
acknowledge you're
system
there.
is beautiful. It's a good analogy. It's not to infantilize anybody, but it's similar if your child comes in and says, "Oh my gosh, I think there's a monster under my bed." You don't respond by going, "Honey, there are no monsters under the bed." You go, I get why you're scared, if that's what that's you get that rapport first. And that's the same thing in internal family systems. And that's the same thing here, which is don't, so if we can personify the part of us that's in trouble as younger, less resourceful, and if we can get that therapeutic side of us to go, "I'm taking care of her," or "I'm taking care of him." And you understand that now we've
Absolutely,
got some traction.
we're building self-trust, with our self and the way that we can show up and handle discomfort and try things. And I've heard you also, I remember I've spoken to you once before, and you were talking about kind of like moment by moment. And I think that this is a really good context to talk about because in so much anxiety work, and I remember when I first started my kind of anxiety journey, there were days that I had to count in seconds. That and I
Yeah.
thankfully that's not the way my life feels anymore, but at the beginning there were so many days that I had to just pass by in seconds because it just felt so hard. And
And
so
you're aware of every second. Exactly.
right, every second is a year, right? Because you're just surviving. And so yeah, if you could just talk about that in the respect of OCD, that second by second model.
Yeah, and I talk about moment by moment, because some moments are longer when we're in the middle of it. And so I'm really talking about six moments. That's the first moment for some people would be like just walking into a circumstance where I've had trouble in the past, or having a something pop up unconsciously that is related to it. And I don't even notice that. All of a sudden I feel my body aroused. I've got, what we would call psychophysiological arousal. That's moment one. Moment two is my obsession pops up, right? And so that's kind of instant. And then moment three is now I'm consciously starting to embellish it and having some urges and so forth. Those three moments are none of our business. And now we've got these other three that I kind of went through a little bit. Moment four is stepping back mindfully. Moment five is to go, no, that's content, not talking about it. And then moment six is to get engaged in something else. And I create this kind of like a mental game, not in any way. Again, I've been doing this for a very long time. It's terribly, terribly painful to think, my family might die if I don't do this ritual tapping of myself right now. That's horrible. But what we created as a game, as a way to shape our understanding of what I literally have to do consciously. And so the other thing in this game is it's a moment by moment game. If I can get to moment four where I'm stepping back, I just won that moment. That's a win for me. Now I want to get to moment five when I can. So if I get to moment five going, no, I'm not doing that, right? That's a win for me. If I can get to moment six and turn my attention to something else, even if it lasts for 8 seconds and my obsession pops back up, I want people to perceive that as a win. I just won that. Oh, what a surprise. The obsession comes back. Of course. If you don't do it that way, then you try to do a new skill and you go, God, it didn't work. What do you mean it didn't work? Well, it came right back. Well, of course it comes right back, right? And so there's this attitude shift, which is again paradoxical. It's kind of hard for people to grasp this, but the position I want to get into is, oh, so I won that moment and then the obsession comes back. What I want people to be able to do is go, okay, great. I get another chance to practice. Because, and that seems like, again, demeaning or something. No, but it's a shift in, I got two options here. I can go, oh no, this is terrible. I'm so frustrated. And I want to stop this. And now I'm secreting more epinephrine. I'm reinforcing the belief that something's dangerous, and I'm back at square one again. So I want to shift my position to, okay, good. I have another opportunity to practice my skills. And also, oh good, or even oh great, you can be sarcastic. It's the opposite of what the disorder needs to stay in control of you. OCD is a parasite. And as a parasite, it requires you to participate, to play your role. And what I say to people is you need to misbehave because you're going against it's like a dogmatic, powerful parent. When you get to be about 13, 14, you start acting out and misbehaving. Like, don't I don't control me, right? Well, that kind of misbehaving is what we have to do, because we have to break the disorder's rules, which is really scary, right? In order to reset everything. So that's what I talk about around moment by moment game. Just when, the moments will start collecting over time. Don't say one other piece about this, which is stay in the present moment, because this is the other thing that the disorder does, is it will say, hey, yeah, you're doing fine right now, but tomorrow is your final exam. And if this pops up right as you're in your final exam, you'll fail it. And then they escalate. And if you fail it, you'll fail the class. You fail the class, they're going to kick you out of Duke University, and your parents won't take, and all that catastrophe. So the disorder drives you into the future. Why go into the future? What's its scheme here? Because the future is always uncertain for everyone. So it's just brilliant in what it does. If it can get you there, the next step forward is always into darkness for all of us. So if it can get you there, it's got you. And so that's why we want to go, I'm going to take the, and here's the other piece regarding my fear, I'm going to take the risk that by doing it this way, I may pay consequences. And that's again another hard swallow. It's like, what? I got to face failing. Well, I think you're escalating around what's really going to happen. But yes, are we working on the disorder or not? Because it really needs to override. We have to be able to override it. So, yes, we have to do it consistently. And yes, because failing tomorrow is part of your theme, then we have to go against what the disorder is saying.
Oh,
I'll tell you a funny story if I
please.
have a moment. This is more than one story. So let's, I mentioned Duke University only because I'm at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. So that's our rivalry.
I was going to
Don't
say,
get me
you're our
started on NC
champion.
State, because we are a rivalry of state too. But, anybody but Duke. So I'm working with these Duke students who'll be like, oh my gosh, I think I've run somebody over. I need to turn around and check. And then when they turn around in their car to check, did they hit anybody? They have another event obsessively. And then they got stuck in that. And, then they're just trapped unless they're on their way to school and their class that they're taking next, if they're late to that class, they get a letter grade taken off of their final. And they can't afford that, and they keep driving, which is so funny to me. It's like, oh, wait a minute. You're going to allow this person to die because you might, what is, I don't get that, right? But it does give us a little taste around, okay, when there's something important enough. It's like parents sometimes with panic disorder and agoraphobia and trying to drive on the highway, which is really nerve-wracking for a lot of them. If their children are in the back seats, they don't want to show their kids their anxiety and avoid things. And so they go ahead and handle it. So, again, lots to be said there, but there you have it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more urgent outcome of getting a bad grade, if that feels more urgent to focus on than the possibility that,
Yeah, so at least they have this experience that they can lean back on.
drawn.
Makes sense. Well, how do you, what, I don't get that. I will do that therapeutic. Well, explain that to me, right? So it's just the beginning for them to go, okay.
Yeah. And, since we're talking about students and what I'm curious about is at what point do people, because I imagine often you see people when they're suffering a lot of negative consequences as a result, like the disorder's gotten so bad or so severe that it's limiting their lives, or there's been dire consequences to their lives and their livelihood or their family relationships. And so on a scale of, 0 to 10, what does it look like? And because I don't think anybody wakes up one day and all of a sudden they have incredibly severe OCD and they have to go see somebody like you. I think it probably grows over time. And so how does that look? And at what point do you recommend, what is the stage at which you recommend somebody comes in and they get some support?
Yeah, well, I mean, good question around that. I'm flashing on people who have hoarding, just collecting things in their house and fill it up. They never come into treatment. They are brought into treatment by their lawyer or their children and their, and so here we have a house that's totally running down and floorboards falling through the floorboards and contamination everywhere. Blah blah blah, and they just don't get it. So we have people to that degree, and those people are very difficult to treat because they're not motivated, because they're so intertwined with the disorder. Then we have kids, 8, 9 years old, and when they tend to come in, families tend to come in is when the child no longer can go to school, or the child's not sleeping all night, so that means nobody's sleeping all night. So with kids, it tends to be that kind of drama that brings families in, which is fine. We can work with that. And then adults, as you say, despite the fact of the costs, I've got, nurses who leave the profession because they can't figure out, did they really draw up 10 cc's or 100 cc's? And, pharmacists who can't trust themselves counting out the pills. So we've got that. So it doesn't always bring people into treatment when everything falls apart. We would like them to get in sooner. And then, what is sooner? Well, when it starts taking over your day and your distress is getting so high, then come on in. The OCD field and people who have, lived experience with OCD and who are therapists as well, want people to stop saying, I'm so OCD, because it's not the same. Although it's interesting, during the pandemic, people with OCD said, see, this is
Felt a
what
lot of
it's like for
validation, yeah.
us. All right. So I think that's if we can get people in at that point, it's like, this isn't working for me. My life is a wreck, or I can't go to church anymore. I don't like this. The exposure treatment has a bad rap. So there, people think, because they've heard of exposure and response prevention, and you have to face the things that you're afraid of. And when they reduce it down to that, they go, I can't do that. I don't want any part of that. So I do think we have to start presenting the treatment differently than, here's what we do. We teach you gradually to face the things that you're afraid of. We've got to do it differently in
Got to work in
terms
the
of
marketing. Yeah.
sales, yeah,
Yeah.
marketing and sales, because it doesn't have to be quite like that. What we're going to do is bring you on board with the treatment protocol, see what you think. So we want to have enough time to go, see what you think. Can we collaborate together? I work for you. Let's see what we can do. How about trying this little thing? We're clever, is what we do every day. So we have little ways to make it not quite so painful. But the other side that I want to bring up too is intention. And if my client still holds on to the intention to be careful, then when they go to do an exposure, okay, well, let's have you touch that countertop. They're already going, I'm not sure I'm ready for this. Okay, well, I'll, and they gingerly touch it. What's wrong with doing that? They just did this exposure, because when they orient themselves like that, boy, this is really nerve, and this is feels so risky, but I'm going to go ahead and do it because I want to get better. Neurologically, they're still telling the brain that this is dangerous. So it is, why do people not progress? Because they're doing the action without their head being in the right place. And I'm trying to say to people, your head has to be in the right place because that's what we're healing. We don't give a damn about whether you touch that counter or not. We gotta undo the belief system. So when you go to touch that counter, I want you to like put your hand down there and rub it all over, and because you've already decided it's not really contaminated, but it's gonna feel like that. And that's what I'm saying about aggressiveness. It's like, go get it. Go into the territory controlled by the disorder and take it back. And once you take a territory back, or you can get that counter, where you can touch it now, never give it back again, which is another kind of guidance. It's like, don't, I want that set in their minds. Like, that's kind of another rule, right? Another guidance. Okay, well, now I've accomplished this. I'm not giving it back. That's, we just do it piece by piece.
I love that analogy of like reclaiming and just like, I'm not giving this back now. I've got
Yeah, it
this part
is.
of
It's
it.
territory. It's territory.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned this a little bit, but I want to really talk about it explicitly also, just to validate people that often these the subject of the disorder is it attacks the thing that's the most meaningful and has the most inherent value to you, I've heard. So like you mentioned a nurse earlier, like if you genuinely want to help people and the disorder is going to then fixate on that you're trying to or will inadvertently harm someone, right? Or if you really care about kids, that's when the pedophilia and like those kinds of images or thoughts or obsessions come in. And so it will, which I've always found so incredibly fascinating, that it's going to take the thing, if it's your spirituality, like you said, it's going to take the thing that means the most to you and then rip it from you and take it over. Why is that?
That's not it. That's not it. And that's what specialists say, that it's that true. But OCD can just show up about anything. So it's not, because if we present it like that, then people go, well, I don't fit that. This isn't the most important thing to me. I just find myself having to do this behavior, and I can't remember what I said in that conversation yesterday, and maybe I humiliated somebody and I need to go back and apologize to them, is not related whatsoever to their low self-esteem, and therefore it goes after it. It goes after whatever works. So it will go after things that you value in that moment. It's like, I didn't value that much until you just took it away, and now, gosh, so it really is. I think that's not fair to be putting that on people, but you're absolutely right. You hear it all the time, and it does not fit. It will go after what works. Its job, its goal is to control your thinking. Just control your moment, and it'll do anything it wants. And if you win back this territory over here, oh, it's like whack-a-mole. Oh, here's the other one. I had a woman I was working with a while back, and was like, she's working on, she can't leave anything that is, trash-like. And so anything in the nursing home, she's got to take and put it in her pocket and bring home. And then she can't get rid of that, right? So I get her to do an experiment, and she comes in the next week. She said, I did what you suggested, and five different things happened that day where all of a sudden I, so it's as though the disorder's going, what do you think you're doing? You think you understand what's here? Let me show you. If you start making inroads here, have five other things that you haven't even thought, so a thought will come up in there, or a memory from 12 years ago will suddenly pop up and go, oh, did I? Could I have done that then? Just like that. So, anyway, long-winded answer to what you're saying.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate you saying, yeah, that can happen, but it doesn't discriminate. What it wants is your attention. It'll attack
That's right.
anything.
Yeah, that's right.
Fantastic. All right, Reed, I know you have a ton of free resources and programs and things like that. So if people want to learn more about you and your services, how can they do that?
Well, so I have a brief self-help site. It's actually the longest. I've celebrated 26 years now, so it's the infancy of the access and the internet. It's a totally free site, and it's got all self-help for all the anxiety disorders, OCD, video clips that people can watch, and so forth. If you just go to that index page, that opening page, which is anxieties.com, so plural, not singular, if you wait 4 seconds, a little quiz will come up, and you can just take the quiz. And if you know, whatever you come up there, you will get back from me a PDF for here's all the videos here that you can look at, here's all the self-help things, here's everything will come to you in a list because it's a huge site. So that's really the best way, is just to jump onto. I'm not pushing product. I'm not, it's free, and I stand by that. And so that's what I would suggest.
Fantastic. Anxieties.com. Dr. Reed Wilson, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for letting me come.